Madison, Wisconsin is as good as it gets if you are like me and you love the college sports.
This is The Jump Around with Jim Rutledge and Pablo Iglesias, streaming live on the ESPN Madison YouTube channel.
Madison down the sidelines. Can they catch him? No! The Badgers answer instantly. There will be no undefeated champion on Wisconsin with an unbelievable stretch drive to the championship game.
Guarded again! Inside the five, touchdown! What a performance by Melvin Gordon!
Chucky Hepburn, Big Ten on the line! Yes!
It's over! The Wisconsin Badgers win 17-9. They are the first Big Ten team ever to win successive Rose Bowl games.
That is the best college sports town in America.
This is The Jump Around, a Badger-dedicated show live on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube channel. I'm Jim Rutledge alongside Pablo Iglesias. We are in the Everlight Solar Studio. We've got Riley Yauch behind the glass. And, boys, is Badger basketball back? That is what we thought Wisconsin basketball was, their beatdown of Iowa. I know it was kind of late or kind of close, maybe 5-6 minutes to go. But that's when particularly Austin Rapp and Nick Boyd took over. Nick Boyd obviously had a game from the beginning, and he's going to be the focus of our show today. But a great bounce-back win for the Badgers, shaking off the disgust of the Ohio State loss, one that knocked them out of the top 25. And hopefully the Badgers will, you know, take this momentum. They got Oregon, they got Washington, Maryland, and Purdue left. So an opportunity to make some hay, put themselves well over 20 wins. They're at 19 right now. I don't like to say they control their own destiny, Pablo, but they do control their own momentum and bring whatever energy they brought to Iowa straight through. Bring that to every game, and the Badgers will be good shape the rest of February and into March.
It goes back to what I was saying last week, too, was I was less concerned about the Ohio State loss. Granted, it was an ugly loss. It's one that you want to shake out. It's one that, if anything, it's a reset, it's a refresh, and it's a one, even like I said, if it knocks you on your ass, it knocks you on your ass. But how are you going to learn from it? How are you going to grow? And the fact that Nick Boyd comes in and flirts with a triple-double, one rebound shy, you could tell that off the missed shot that everybody in the Kohl Center, heck, I was watching it at home, we all wanted the triple-double from Nick Boyd. But the fact that the Badgers were able to bounce back and do that in the fashion that they did and take down an Iowa team who's fresh off a Nebraska upset, I was very pleased with how the Badgers were able to respond. And from a rotation standpoint, too, they look pretty good. Now, again, is this a perfect team? No, but who really is a perfect team these days, especially in college basketball, when you catch anybody on a certain day in March, you just get hot, and you never know.
Shout out to LePay on the call. I was driving back from ice skating with my daughters, and I made the deal. I'm like, the way back, I want to, because they had the game on at the ice rink, so I was able to kind of keep an eye on it, and then the way back, I wanted to listen to it. So I turned on SiriusXM and listened on the SiriusXM app, and I heard LePay. And he was fantastic, and very quickly turning on the broadcast, heard that Boyd was near a triple-double. So I explained that to everyone in the car, because I was in the car with three girls and then my wife. So four total, three young women and my wife. None of them really follow basketball. But actually, while I was explaining it, Matt LePay did a good job of explaining it on the radio as well. And then I'm counting in my head, because you're listening, and LePay's so on point with calling the game, that I heard, you know, Boyd bounce pass to Rapp, and then Rapp knocks down the three. And in my head, I'm like, I think that's 10. And literally as I'm thinking that, LePay says, and that's assist number 10 for Nick Boyd, or something along those lines. So then the whole time I'm just counting, listening to hear Boyd's name on a rebound. But LePay did a great job painting an awesome picture there.
LePay's the best. I mean, there's no way around it. Jeff Levering told us on Saturday Scramble, if LePay says it, it's probably true. So to be in sync with LePay is a good feeling.
Yes.
It's a good feeling.
Absolutely. It's also a good feeling to be rooting for Nick Boyd. And we're going to talk about, you know, where he fits legacy-wise, because he continues to climb up the charts. Now I believe he's in third place, maybe tied for second for the most amount of 20-point games in a single season for the Wisconsin Badgers. Lonnell Tucker, number one at that list. Frank Kaminsky right in front of Boyd. And that win, powered by Boyd, who seems to be hitting his stride as the Badger star at the right time, puts the Badgers, I don't know. I see that Lenardi has them as a 7 seed. Badgers a 6 seed according to CBS. But then, you know, I ran it through ChatGPT, and
It was saying more of an 8 seed. So I don't know. I'll say this. I feel pretty good that if the Badgers win out and then don't fall on their face in the Big Ten tournament, I think they can hit that 7 seed and stay out of the 8-9 matchup.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what's interesting, where you said the Badgers don't control their own destiny, but they control their own momentum. I almost feel like you do control your own destiny, too. Just keep, because how many more games do we have for the rest of the season? At least three?
I believe there's four.
Four? Okay. So, yeah, this is going to be tough because the Badgers are coming in as an underdog from what I believe I've heard against Oregon, and that's just going to be a tough road trip. But also, you know what? Jump in and let's see how the Badgers answer this one. I do think that they do control their own destiny, though, too, in terms of seeding. But I'm confident wherever this Badger team, even if the road is a little tougher based off of, let's say they get a more of a 7-8 draw. Granted, I still feel confident of where they're at. I want to see how they're playing in the Big Ten tournament because, like I said before, the Big Ten tournament is, or really just the Big Ten as a whole, is a slugfest. And if Wisconsin owns three, and I say this confidently, hopefully we all agree, Wisconsin owns three of the best wins in college basketball. Those are two wins on the road, one win at home, and then if you put this team on a neutral site, they got to do it last season, too, against Michigan State to advance into the final. So why not? I don't think seeding really matters for the Badgers, so that's where I'm at.
Yeah, there's no shot.
You don't think seeding matters
for the Badgers based off of where they're? Well, I think no matter where they're going to be at, I think they're going to put up a fight.
To get to Sweet 16, they need it. They need a little.
It's a big difference facing Kansas,
sure,
or Florida in the round of 32 versus Arizona or UConn. Even though, I think the Badgers could beat those teams. That's not the team you'd prefer to face in the second round.
Because I still have this worry,
the third or fourth,
that it's really like there's six teams and then everyone else. And though everyone can be beaten in college basketball, but I just worry that in NIL, and more importantly for the Final Four aspect of it, that I'm starting to worry that the new ceiling for teams like the Badgers is the Elite Eight outside of like a true Cinderella run. I think the new Cinderellas are going to be teams like the Badgers, and the other teams are going to be even further out of luck. The Sweet 16 is going to be their new title because the teams with the big money, I think, can secure themselves a Final Four as long as they don't, crap. Every year there's once in a while a team doesn't show up. But I just think the NIL money is going to make it more and more likely that there's going to be four or five teams that it's like, good luck getting past them.
It's going to be really interesting to see if it's a lot of chalk this year. But I think the Badgers should win at a bare minimum three of their last four. Oregon's garbage. If Oregon's favored to win, that would be insane. They're 10-17. I mean, their big advantage is the game's at 10 p.m. Central tomorrow night, which is brutal.
Yeah.
But I think Biddle is still hurt. There's no shot the Badgers should lose to the Ducks. Washington's meh. Then you have Maryland, who's okay. And then Purdue. I'd love to beat Purdue, but that's kind of a crapshoot. But if they're already a 6 seed right now, that seems to be the consensus. You win three more games, play a close game against Purdue, then in the Big Ten tournament, you win one or two games, losing the semifinals. I feel like you locked up a 6 seed. Then you have the opportunity to play a 3 seed and be the BYU of last year, and you're looking pretty darn good at being a sneaky Sweet 16, Elite Eight type team.
So I'll go back on this one. Wisconsin is actually an 8.5 points.
Okay, I was going to say, yes. There's no shot.
I was like, wait a minute. I thought I heard on the SportsCenter updates, but let me go back and take a listen to that again, and let me go look at the numbers. Wisconsin is an 8.5 point favorite. They are favored to win this one tomorrow night against the Ducks. So, yeah, I just feel like, again, I guess when we go back and say that seeding does matter if you're trying to go to the Sweet 16. But I, again, just regardless of where this team is at, they can put up a fight against some of the best in college basketball. I do believe that still. And this is partly maybe, you know what? I'm speaking a little bit with the heart. I'm leading with the heart in this one, but it's just based off of the fight that they can put up. But things do need to go in their way, too, or, that needs to favor them. With an Ohio State performance where, again, you go, I believe it was 7 of 26 from 3, you can't rely on the three-pointer, and as a whole, you need to figure out exactly how are you going to fill those gaps. And based off of what we're seeing from Nick Boyd, I think he's a reason why a lot of things are gelling for this Wisconsin Badger team.
Speaking of Nick Boyd, we had some fun with Nick Boyd on the jump around. I think we're going to get to that a little bit later far as Chuck Norris facts around Nick Boyd. But
I love it.
And you guys can bring your own. My favorite might have been Molly Brown's, where Nick Boyd takes zero licks to get to the center of Tootsie Pop.
I heard that on my way home yesterday. Yeah. That was
Hearing that in real time was great.
That was something.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was a lot to take in on that one. But let's talk about Nick Boyd, and is he the most electric transfer? Let's start with that. Is he the most electric transfer? And we're going to keep this specific to the portal era, because there are other players who, you know, could technically fall in as a transfer. Then it's like, well, this player might be better. I want to keep it to the portal era, which narrows it down to me for three names. It's either John Tanjay, AJ Storr, or Nick Boyd. Nick Boyd almost had the first triple-double for the Wisconsin Badgers since Ethan Happ in 2019. And he's only behind, as we said earlier, Alonzo Tucker and Frank Kaminsky in 20-point games in a single season, which I think he's got a very good chance of passing. He's not going to be player of the year like Frank, but Nick Boyd is that dude.
I think what I loved the most when I was looking at the numbers between John Tanjay and Nick Boyd was that Nick Boyd, I feel like even though Tanjay had some lopsided games, for the most part, he was averaging a good amount, but there were a couple single digits, even one game where he only played 22 minutes but posted a zero. Nick Boyd, I believe the lowest he's scored in a game was 12 points. And granted, it was like he could still be the difference maker even if he scores 12 points. And yes, he's on a heater. And early on in the season, I think he came close to a 40 or surpassed 40. I think he's just been consistent, and he has been the spark that has helped reignite the Badgers in a way. Like, again, I wish we could have had a world where we had John Tanjay and Nick Boyd. But I love how consistent Nick Boyd has been. Even in an off day, he's still able to corral and bring these guys together. One quick play I remember was the offensive rebound he had, and he was able to find Austin Rapp on the cut for an and one. I mean, that's just a veteran presence. This is a guy who's been in a Final Four and made some deep runs, so we'll see if he could be the missing link for the Badgers in the postseason.
Yeah, I was sorry to interrupt you, but I was kind of surprised looking at the stats how much better Nick Boyd is than AJ Storr was for the Badgers, and how much better of a scorer Nick Boyd is than John Tanjay. Like, his whole thing, Tanjay's thing, like, I felt like he was scoring 30-some points a game, and he only averaged 19.8. Nick Boyd averages 20.6, and it feels like he's scoring like maybe 10 to 15 a game. It's insane. And I think the big X factor for me, which is why I think Nick Boyd can lead this team farther than the round of 32 for sure and potentially to a Final Four, is the energy he brings. I feel like that's his X factor. I've never seen someone hype up the Kohl Center since a Frank Kaminsky and a Sam Decker like Nick Boyd does. The Kohl Center against Michigan State was rocking more than I have seen it in years.
So the way I kind of look at it is, and I know this is more of a ceiling thing, I think the best pure scorer out of those three was AJ Storr. Now, he didn't consistently do it, and he fell off a cliff towards the end of his time at Wisconsin.
Yeah, he only averaged less than 17 a game.
Yes, but for a minute there, he was really scoring, and that's more potential and ceiling than actual what he did here. So I would put him a clear third, which comes down to Tanjay, and almost, he seemed like, even though I think most people thought it was Storr when he got here, Tanjay seemed like the most pro-ready guy. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing working against him pro-wise is lack of elite athleticism and his age. Mm-hmm. But he was very versatile. His size, shot making, a perfect Badger-type player. But I think, and to your point, Riley, it's the fit for Boyd. Nick Boyd fits Wisconsin basketball the best. He seems aligned with what Greg Gard and his system thrives on, which is decision-making, tempo control, toughness. Then, obviously, he fills the stat sheets, but he's not, for lack of a better word, hijacking the possession like Tanjay and Storr had done at times. He's defending, he's facilitating, he's closing in on plays defensively, and he is, out of those transfers, the best, I think, transfer in Wisconsin portal history. And then the next question we kind of get to, though, is Nick Boyd is the most electric player since. Do you want to give me some options, or do you want to say you're first, or I give you some options?
Let's go options.
All right, so options. Here are some names that I kind of came up with here. And the, like, I guess first part here is defining electric. And Riley, you said a little bit there, crowd reaction, heat check confidence, just overall confidence on the court, highlight potential, and takeover ability. And so those are kind of some of the things that I kind of chalk up as electric. So a name that came up here is Ethan Happ. I'm going to cross him off the list because he was like a minivan. He was very efficient.
I would not call Ethan Happ electric.
I agree. But he's a hell of a basketball player. We can mention his name.
Yes, he's very good. Yep.
He'll get you 200,000 miles. He'll get you to point A to point B.
Yeah. Nigel Hayes, I don't think, had the impact on the court, and he's a heck of a basketball player. But as these guys do, he was on a great team. He was the emotional spark of that team and a heck of a player. But I don't think he reaches the electric status because he never was like the star of those teams. Even when the Final Four guys all left, it was him and Koenig. Koenig still was probably more electric.
I would argue he had some electric moments.
Yes.
He had way more electric moments than Ethan Happ, but he wasn't necessarily a spark plug type player.
All right, Frank Kaminsky, obviously on this list.
I wouldn't put Nick Boyd above Frank Kaminsky.
No.
Frank Kaminsky could change a game like
that. I know,
that,
but that, I agree. But his
if you're talking since Frank Kaminsky, yes, I'm down with Nick Boyd is the most electric player.
Okay,
since
but that's,
Frank Kaminsky.
That puts both of you in a not an awkward position, but like Devin Harris was pretty electric.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch a ton of Devin Harris.
Devin Harris
is
flashy,
just a little
man.
Before my time.
There's a case that like Devin Harris was like the biggest, one of the biggest recruits, if still not like the biggest recruit in Wisconsin history.
Yes.
I mean, and he was a lottery pick and played for Dallas for like probably a Maverick Hall of Famer, not an NBA Hall of Famer, mm-hmm. or college. Or sorry, it is a basketball Hall of Fame. Maybe he gets
already.
In there. So Devin Harris was great at Wisconsin. So I think Devin's got to be on the list.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Jordan Taylor.
Yep, that's fair.
Michael Jordan Taylor, as he was called by Gus Johnson back in the day. So Jordan Taylor had that clutch gene. He had the takeover ability. He had all those things. A couple names here. Alando Tucker, I would not call him electric. A little different than Ethan Happ, but I wouldn't call what he did here was electric. Bronson Koenig had the clutch gene. He's a possibility. Sam Dekker. What do we think about Sam Dekker? Electric. Obviously a great basketball player, but do we call him electric?
Not to the same level as Frank. He was really fun to watch, but I'd call him electric, but not quite Frank Kaminsky level.
Would the Final Four team even call themselves electric? Because if Frank was on the national broadcast and said we played significantly slower,
yeah.
I mean, the great team, like you said, Riley, but I don't know if I would even say like that team was electric, and I'm not trying to knock on them. It was just the way that they played basketball, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the way they were coached to play basketball. Yes. Yeah. So here's the four that I got here, and tell me if you disagree. I'm going to go with Nick Boyd, Frank Kaminsky, Devin Harris, Jordan Taylor.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. It's hard for me to comment on Devin Harris and Jordan Taylor since I didn't grow up watching those guys. But for sure, I put Nick Boyd just like one notch below Frank Kaminsky level of player, level of electricity he brings to the floor.
Are we excluding Johnny Davis from this, or did we just say Johnny?
Now I'm going to put Johnny over any of those guys.
I was shocked. Looking at Johnny Davis' stats, I forgot how good his statistical season was.
But who are you
was.
Taking off this list? Forget the I mean, again, Jordan Taylor... Like he took over game. Like
And that's
what hurts the Johnny Davis season is he was clearly the number one and by far. Chucky Hepburn hit some big shots too, but Johnny Davis
was the
only
guy on that team.
If you put Johnny Davis, let's say on this team, what does that look like? I think there was a little bit more of like a dynamic spread versus when Johnny Davis was on that team. Granted, it was amazing watching him take over. I had a front row seat getting to watch the alley-oops, watching him cut to the rim and what he could do. But if he had an off night, then that was it for the Badgers. Now, I can't say like an off night for Nick Boyd, let's say. Yeah, this is why I still believe Nick Boyd should be above him on the list, but Johnny Davis should get some type of mention. It's because, again, Nick Boyd... He is the motor that helps this team run, but if he's having an off day, it's like somebody else could, John Blackwell, Nolan Winter, somebody else, even Austin Rapp, could pick up the slack from there. But I got to say, Johnny Davis not being on this list, I feel like it's a crime right now.
See, but Johnny Davis disappeared when we needed him most.
Well, he got his ankle stepped on, that's why.
Well,
yeah, but
still, one foot.
You got to play through it.
Pablo, you're just in the moment. You can't not make the Sweet 16. When you're the guy and not do it, roll your ankle or not. Like Jordan Taylor, I think made multiple Sweet 16s. Might have been the point guard of an Elite Eight team. Big Ten title, won a Big Ten title with Jordan Taylor. Face of the program during that time. 2010-2011 season, 18 points per game, five assists per game, and shot 43% from three.
Which you also have to take into account, which same with like Frank only averaged 18.8, but that was in Bo Ryan's really slow offense.
So they took advanced analytics of Jordan Taylor, and I am pulling this from memory, but they said that points per possession, he was a better basketball or a better scorer than Jimmer Fredette that season.
Wow. And everyone knows Jimmer Fredette.
That's pretty nice.
Not bad. Yeah,
and so we're not taking Devin Harris off the list. You're not taking Frank Kaminsky off the list. And we already. No. And I'm sorry, Nick Boyd is better than Johnny Davis.
Yep,
as an all-around basketball player.
Yeah, I would agree. So would you slide? So would so we
just
say?
To speak still, I mean, Johnny Davis is a hell of a basketball player. So is Ethan Happ
exactly.
and Nigel Harris.
So would we say? Are we saying Nick Boyd is the third most electric player in Wisconsin Badgers basketball history?
In modern basketball era, yeah. I mean, Michael Finley. I'm sure I'm guilty of this too.
Yeah,
Michael
like
Finley was
a little before,
mm-hmm.
but I just that one is way out there. I would say the Bo Ryan plus era, the Bo Ryan era, which includes Greg Gard in my opinion because he's a Bo Ryan disciple, kind of like we do with the Barry Alvarez thing. Like starting with the Bo Ryan era, I would say that that's our group.
All right,
because Finley was Rashard Griffith was a heck of a basketball player too, but yeah,
some pretty damn good company for
Tracy
Nick
Webster
Boyd.
Was good too. Yeah. Yeah, that's good company there. So I am good with that. Let's get to our clip of the week.
Around these parts, there's only time for the best of the Badgers.
We don't know exactly where we are right now.
Why don't you own the Wisconsin football team?
We need to play better significantly.
They're spoiled rotten.
This is the clip of the week on the Jump Around.
Go someplace else. Go boo in a bar.
Yeah, it is time for the clip of the week. And today we have the aforementioned, the oft-discussed Nick Boyd from his post-game press conference after the Badgers defeated the Iowa Hawkeyes, fielding a question from Jim Polzin that Jim, in his most recent column about Nick Boyd, admitted was not the best worded question. Take a listen.
Nick, there are some really, really good point guards in the Big Ten this year. You've gone up against a couple of them recently and, you know, held your own. Do you take those matchups personally?
Hold my own.
So I think you just answered my question. You clearly take those matchups personally?
Yeah, I love to compete. You know what I mean? That's the whole reason why I came here. Play against the best guys in the country, whether it's point guard, shooting guard, center, whoever it is. You know, I mean, that's the reason why I came to the Big Ten. So, yeah. Love to compete. It's the name of the game.
All right.
He's so fearless.
Two things. One, Nick loved it. Jim Polzin rolled with it. And
kind of
had a great comeback. And obviously, Nick was having some fun with Jim as well. I mean, that's it. And we talked to Ken Lavica, FAU play-by-play guy, when the Owls went to the Final Four. And he said, I believe that Boyd has that dog in him or something along those lines. And Nick Boyd is tough. Nick Boyd brings that to this Badger basketball team. Brings an edge, brings when the tournament rolls around, been there, done that. Final Four, which meant he went to Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. And I think he went to the Sweet 16 with San Diego State last year.
Yes. But, yeah, I believe so.
I thought every FAU member of that championship team at least made it to the Sweet 16. One of them one was with Michigan, one was with Elijah Martin with Florida.
This isn't an FAU show.
And Johnny
Come on.
Davis with Arkansas. But
this isn't an Owl
right,
show.
But
Jim.
It ties to Nick Boyd. Like he's got that magic FAU who owl in him that's gonna carry the badge. If they get to the Sweet 16 this year,
you gotta
give it to the Dusty May dust from the Final Four team that the FAU Owls still have sprinkled on them. Nick Boyd being the last one.
The
thing that I love the most, as I said, he's fearless and in any situation, not just on the court, he's not afraid. He doesn't flinch. And especially even in that moment, too, where he's like, wait a minute, hold my own. He's ready. He is ready to go for the fight. He's always got the gloves on in the best way. And again, I loved going back to the Illinois game where he's like, how did I get blocked by a 7-footer? And Greg Gard points out, well, you're going up against a 7-footer. The odds of getting blocked are probably going to happen once in a while. But the fact that he has that type of confidence is so amazing, and it never seems to go away. He's always driving to the rim. He's trying to make sure that he resets, and I just love the confidence. Again, whether he's at the mic, whether he's on the court, just being himself in pregame warmups, that's who he is through and through, and I love the fact that Ken said when we talked to him, I believe it was back in April, calling him a dog. This is what we got. We got the dog barking left and right.
And that's the thing. Like, what I was saying earlier, he brings the energy and he rises to the occasion. He was facing off against Bennett Sturts of Iowa, who is one of the Bob Cousy Award finalists, which somehow, I don't know how Nick Boyd isn't on that list. But here's this finalist who's up for the best point guard in the nation, Bennett Sturts. And how does he do against the Badgers? He had a solid game, 23 points, 2 assists, 1 rebound, facing off against Nick Boyd and the Badgers. How does Nick Boyd do? He drops 27 points, 10 assists, 9 rebounds, 1 board away from a triple-double. He rises to the occasion every time. And what have the Badgers been lacking? Someone who can rise to the occasion when the lights are the brightest in the tournament. It's so fun to watch, and it makes me very excited come March.
And the other thing, too, is that he clearly makes everybody around him better.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this isn't a knock on Johnny Davis or John Tonjay. Again, these were the guys who clearly were the lead scorers on that team. But you can tell not only is Nick Boyd, as you said, Riley, ready to rise to the occasion, but he's making other guys better. He can help create shots for John Blackwell. He can help drive and create penetration on the double team. And all of a sudden, look who's wide open at the top. Aussie. Austin Rapp is right there. How he's able to also create that penetration, how he's able to create other opportunities, that's what you said, Jim. It's the little bit of the Dusty May magic. That's what helps create opportunities.
Dust.
The magic dust.
Was that Dusty.
Dusty magic. All right.
Well, yeah. Well, Dusty might win a national title this year.
That's true. But that's what it is. He makes guys better.
Speaking of getting better, let's get to the Twitter portal.
It's time for the Badgers Twitter portal.
Yeah, it is. Let's enter the Badgers Twitter portal, starting with a video that I created and posted on the
Flex.
ESPN Madison social media pages. A Nick Boyd hype reel with some moments from the jump around and highlights of Nick Boyd's. I want you to grade this edit, as I'm calling it. Take a listen.
If you could give me one word to describe Nick Boyd, what is that one word and why?
Dog.
Yeah, and is it just me, or has he done this so quiet?
Now the number one defense in college basketball, Boyd 3, another one!
Boyd, as a true point guard, which Blackwell was not last year, takes a lot of the responsibility. So I think just sets his team up to be a better run team because they have Nick Boyd, a true point guard.
Boyd attacks so quick, hanging, that is magnificent.
It's absolutely Boyd, hands down. He's the type of guy I want on my team.
I love what he's brought to the Badgers. I wish the only downside is I wish we had him for a little longer.
I'll be honest, could have used a little bit more me, but otherwise it was great. It was great. It was great.
Selfish.
Yeah.
Selfish.
Yes. Otherwise, I liked it, but just a little more me next time was my only feedback.
All right. Good to know, Pablo.
Oh, it's heat, man. I was with you from the beginning to the end of that, watching that whole thing come to life. So proud of you for putting that together. That is absolute hype. And yeah, just shows that we were on the Nick Boyd train, but don't worry. Applications for the fan club are still wide open, so make sure you join us before it gets too late come March.
Yeah, I think everyone, if you're not on the Nick Boyd hype train at this point, I don't know what you're doing. You're probably not watching Wisconsin Badgers basketball. But for all the people that are awoken in March, looking forward to seeing them on the train. And speaking of getting on the train, let's all hop on the Minnesota hate train. As for the 28th year in a row, Wisconsin will finish with more Big Ten wins than Minnesota. Let's go.
I knew this was going to be a candidate right away as soon as I sent this tweet to the group chat.
Yeah, and I genuine question, though. When was the last time Minnesota was relevant in basketball?
I saw, and I hate to admit this, probably one of the more electric games I've ever seen in my life, and I believe it was this year. It was 96-97.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Jackson was their point guard. So the year they went to the Final Four.
Minnesota did?
Yes.
Nice. Really?
Yes.
Okay.
They went 31-4. Their head coach was Clem Haskins, led by Bobby Jackson. Classic, amazing college basketball point guard. And then
you had nothing in the NBA.
And it was right in that window. I saw them beat Michigan State at the Barn in the student section. That was pretty awesome to see and take in. So I have to give them credit for that. But I was, either it was like that year or the year after, right in that window.
Okay.
I don't know which one it was. I believe Bobby Jackson was on that team. But no, that's a long-ass time ago.
Yeah, it's like almost three decades now. So,
Yeah, so that's the last one I got.
I truly have no idea, but this is something to get you riled up in the best way about Riley. Don't you also love that a lot of Minnesota recruits end up coming to Wisconsin? You think Tyler Wall, you think Stephen Crowell, you think Brad Davison, you think of
Nolan Winter,
yep. John Lure. Look at all the guys, Jordan Taylor. Look at those guys from Minnesota. Just to get you a little riled up,
Isn't
Riley.
Jared Berger in from Minnesota too? I believe he was a Minnesota guy too.
I don't know, but I wouldn't be shocked. We own the state of Minnesota. It's great. Just need to get that axe back.
There you go.
That's all I care about moving forward because they suck at everything else. And now, third but not quite final from Harry Doyle Burner. Greg Gard, the travel will not have an impact on the results in the next two games, Wisconsin traveling to Oregon and Washington. Mick Cronin should take notes. Have you guys seen Mick Cronin's rant about travel?
No, I saw this other one where he was an absolute prick to a reporter.
Yeah. Well, let me play you Mick Cronin ranting about the travel from West Coast to East Coast.
So much has been made about you guys going east. You just came back from a prolonged East Coast trip. Yeah. I'm wondering, have you seen anything from the teams that have to come out here and stay out here? Is there any kind of balance with that in terms of the wear and tear and just what you've seen on the court?
Wear and tear on them?
Yeah.
Is that a joke? Please tell me that's a joke.
Is it even comparable is essentially what I'm trying to say.
Have you ever looked at the NBA stats and what the gamblers and all those people do on West versus East?
Oh.
Talk to Eric Musselman, ask him that question, who coached in the NBA. Good luck, West, going East. We have to go back four times. Uh-huh. The Big Ten teams get to come to Los Angeles where it's 70 degrees one time a year. They don't
playing
even
outside?
Have to switch hotels.
No. Yeah,
we're in the same, we're 12 miles apart.
Oh,
are you
no.
kidding me? Oh, please no. tell me you're kidding me. Is this a plan? Is this a planted question? I mean, you cannot be serious with that. And meanwhile, we've seen the Eiffel Tower, or we've seen the Statue of Liberty twice
in France
in the last 3 weeks.
New York City.
While we were landing.
Yeah.
You can't possibly stop. I'm going to eat, man. You can't. I mean, he's asked me to feel sorry because Iowa had to come to L.A. for a few days. You can't be serious. You know how much people vacation here? Trust me. I got a lot of friends. I have to tell them no. I'm focused. Everybody from back in Cincinnati wants to come out here all the time. I have to ration them out.
No way.
Okay? Nobody wants to be back there. How's the weather in Iowa City?
Come on. All right. Mick Cronin's got to be the most insane. This is so insufferable.
Well, so these are two separate things, almost three, because I'm not great at geography, but I believe Cincinnati nor Iowa is on the East Coast. And I know that Iowa's in the central time zone.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati would be in the East. But still, if he would have complained about the hour jump, I would have at least bought it a little bit. But again, we're not in the NBA, Mick. You're in college, which means you don't play every night. You don't play back-to-backs. So, again, the only argument I would have heard from him, but it still reverts the other way, which is why I didn't bring it up, is the time difference.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously kids coming east to west would have the same problem. You're going to play basketball indoors. You don't need to make fun of not wanting to go to Pennsylvania or wherever. Like, what does that have to do with basketball? In fact, that should be easier and an advantage for you because when you drag your kids from L.A. to Happy Valley,
a vacation there, though,
right,
Jim.
Yeah, no, but if you drag your kids from L.A. to Happy Valley, they're going to sit in a hotel room and think about ball.
Yeah.
And then everyone else coming out to L.A. is all distracted. Go ask people in Miami if you want to do NBA. Ask them about the South Beach flu.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, go look up James Harden stats.
Did you have the South Beach flu?
Well, no, I live there, so I kind of live with
it. Just go look up
James Harden. You just had it.
Go look up James Harden stats in the cities with the most gentlemen's clubs. His numbers dip.
Lou Williams left the bubble to go get some lemon pepper wings.
But it is not the same as college because you get time off in college. You don't play back-to-backs. So anyways, Mick's an idiot.
It's ridiculous. Mick Cronin has to be the absolute worst coach in college basketball to listen to on a mic.
Yeah, he took over Fran McCaffrey.
The most absurd takes of all time. He's whining about his players. He's whining about other players. He's the worst. It sucks, and it's terrible. Pablo, any thoughts?
My only thought is, have you guys seen Billy Madison? Jim, you might know the quote that I'm going to. It paraphrased real quick. You've said all these things, and after all that, everybody in this room is much dumber after listening to that. That's exactly how I felt. It just kept going on and on and on. What the hell am I supposed to take away from this? You're just making up excuses, a bunch of nothing burgers. You're just crying. It is a true woe is me. We live in 70. Do you know how hard it is to live in 70 degree weather consistently where everybody wants to come to your city? Do you know how hard it is? And it's just great.
Man, it's almost like all those West Coast teams should form their own conference or something like that if they want shorter travel times. All right, last thing from the Twitter portal. This is from Jim, Matt, and Molly. Some Nick Boyd, Chuck Norris facts, courtesy of Jim Rutledge and ChatGPT. Jim, would you like to read these off?
Well, they're more on Pablo's side, so Pablo, do you want to try to read those from over there?
Yeah, so we've got Nick Boyd doesn't break a press. The press breaks itself out of respect, is that what it is?
Yeah, out of respect. Yeah.
I have a good view. I can okay,
yeah, go, right. go for it.
Number two, when Nick Boyd calls for the ball, it apologizes for not already being in his hands. Number three, Nick Boyd doesn't miss shots. The rim just occasionally moves to make the game fair. Number four, opposing point guards don't study film. They study survival. And last but not least, Nick Boyd's crossover didn't just shake his defender, it changed his life priorities.
We needed some like Wild Wild West music to this.
What was the best one?
Chuck Norris is a fan of Nick Boyd.
What was your favorite?
I liked the either one or two. Doesn't break the press. The press breaks itself out of respect. That felt like the most Chuck Norris-y type one to me, or like the ball apologizing or the rim moving to make the game fair. The first three are definitely the best, in my opinion.
I go with, I got to go with doesn't break the press. The press breaks itself. That's
out of respect.
That's Nick Boyd.
Yes.
In a nutshell, but that'll do it for the Twitter portal.
All right, we're going to get to our guest, which is actually we're going to play an interview from Greg Gard with Wilde and Tausch. So before we get that, I'll tell you about Steinhoffels. And during Steinhoffels Make It Your Own event, creating furniture that fits your style is easy. Choose your fabric, select your finish, add the details. That makes it yours. Right now at Steinhoffels, you'll save at least 10% off store-wide. Then you can take an extra 5% off special order and in stock. Items $999 or more. And if you need design help, you can get up to $200 off Steinhoffels Decorating Solution Packages. Shop in-store or online at steinhoffels.com. Greg Gard coming up next.
During Steinhoffels Make It Your Own event, you can create furniture as unique as you are. Choose your fabric, select your finish, add the details that make it yours. Start with 10% off or more store-wide. Then take an extra 5% off special order and in-stock items $9.99 or more. Need design help? Get up to $200 off Steinhoffels Decorating Solutions packages. Shop in-store and online at steinhoffels.com. Relax, it's Steinhoffels.
It is our friend Greg Gard, the head coach of the Wisconsin men's basketball team. Gardo, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Are there rules? Like, do you have to – how carefully do you have to choose your words when you get completely hosed by officiating?
I think you're always very selective on what you talk about, and also not seeing maybe all the film angles. So you want to make sure I'm not afraid to say what I'm thinking, but I also want to make sure I have all my information in front of me. So, I have my processes expressing my disagreements with the league and follow those. But, there's so many other things in that game that we could have done a better job of controlling that you don't want to put it in an official's hands in a judgment call where it flips the script like that did.
So, Greg, after you watched all those angles, did any of your thoughts change? Because – all of us think you got jobbed, if I'm being honest. We all think we got jobbed. What did you see after you took a look at everything a little closer?
Well, you got to go back to the intent of the rule change of why charges are not being called now. And I thought even though Boyd initiated some contact, the situation awareness I didn't think was very good. in terms of what they were trying to attempt to do to chase us down and foul us.
Uh-huh.
And Nick was running out of real estate. He had to go to his right because he was coming to this to the center line, and it was going to be over and back. And again, just all the 10 years ago, is that a charge? I got a coaching staff member in Brad Davison that made a living on taking charges.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That was the whole tent of the rule change, was to take that those plays out of the game and not reward the defense for from that angle of taking contact and falling. And Wright did a good job. You know, he's as good as setting those things up as I've seen since Brad played. So credit to him for selling it. And, we just got to do a better job of putting ourselves not in that position. And whether that's plays before, it's within that play. There's a lot of things to learn from it. But I go back to the intent of the rule change was to eliminate that from being a charge, and that those are supposed to be blocks. There was it didn't go our way, so we have to learn from it and move on.
Coaches always want to put their players in the best
Very
place.
Diplomatic answer.
I was going to say, coaches
Very
always want to put their players in position to succeed. We did the exact opposite with Gardo, but he still did succeed at avoiding saying anything that would get him fined. All right, let's we'll get back to your team, but I do want to talk about a road at night because it is not only powerful, but it is obviously dear to many of us, especially those of us that went to college and were friends with Howard way back in the day, and you and how close you are with him and everything you endured with him and his family when this happened. It is such a hard movie to put into words because it is so tragic and upsetting and yet uplifting. It is so extremely well done and yet so hard to watch. And for those that haven't gotten to see this documentary, it will be at Marcus Point Cinema in Madison starting this week. Starts on Friday. There's a panel on Friday. Our buddy Stan Van Gundy, who was on the show last week, will be there on Saturday, along with Rashard Griffith and Andy Kilbride doing a panel on Saturday. Gardo, when you are promoting this film, how do you talk about it, and what was it like to be part of the process of making it and telling the story, which John Roach obviously does beautifully?
Yeah, I mean, and I think in terms of your second part of your question, being part of the process, it was obviously extremely difficult to bring all those memories back up and have to tell that on camera. But it's very, as you mentioned, very uplifting in terms of this is a way, and making this documentary was a way to help Howard and his family. And I think everybody who was asked jumped at the opportunity to be able to help in whatever fashion that may be or whatever role that may be. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to believe that we're coming up on 7 years, here in May of the accident and just everything. And I think it's such... so timely to continue to visit this because, we live in a 24-hour or less news cycle. I mean, we're talking about the Super Bowl today, and then tomorrow we won't. And this tragedy that happened almost 7 years ago, not for the people that are close to Howard, but for the general public and around Badger Nation, gets put in yesterday's news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the family and Howard are still going through extreme struggles. So I think, reminding everyone that this is an extreme tragedy, but it continues to live on every day that they have to deal with, obviously the loss of life, but also the disability that Howard's acquired because of it. Just reminding everyone that they still need help. There's still, there's still the daily struggle, and not to let this die in yesterday's news cycle. And forget about it. And I think John does a great job of telling this in the documentary. And credit to him and his team for getting it into Marcus Point. And I know they've put it in other places too. And trying to get it, moving with Netflix and some of those streaming devices and streaming apps. So just trying to continue to tell the story and not let it fade into, like I said, the expired news cycle.
You know, I said this to Stan Van Gundy when he joined us last week, and I'll say this to you. You know, I think I'm a pretty good person. I know you're a really good person. But in the film, when there's the portion where Howard's pastor is talking about how, you know, they went to visit him in the hospital and he wants to pray for the woman's family, of the family of the woman that hit them, I just thought, I'm not that good of a person. I just am not. And, right. And I, you know, knowing Howard, that didn't exactly surprise me. But is that one of the more poignant parts of the film for you, is that that shines a light on just how authentically good Howard is of a person?
Yeah, and you know, I didn't need the film to be able to tell me that. I mean, I was there right. The day of the accident, and in the afternoon we flew to Michigan to be with him, and you know, in addition to talking about, you know, Jaden and Jennifer, you know, he was in the same ICU room with his son Jarrell, and all he talked about is how he now had to be the caretaker and make sure he made his deceased wife and daughter really proud of his son and help raise his son and be there for him. And obviously that was before the heart attack and everything that happened, you know, a few weeks later, but mm-hmm. his focus was already turned within hours after losing his wife and daughter to how he had to be so strong and his responsibilities were right on and with his son. And he had completely, even though he was grieving extremely, he had already flipped his focus to how he can help his son. And I think that just speaks to the character of Howard and who he is as a person. And, you know, the film does a great job of documenting events after that of what, like Pastor Matt talked about. But, you know, that anybody that knows Howard is not surprised by him wanting to turn a tragedy into something positive for other people and how he can help other people comes out in this story.
All right, last thing about this, because I know you got other things on your plate today. Two things about Howard. One, obviously now he has been unable to do what he turned his attention to, so I know you and so many others and his parents, it has taken a village. But what has it been like to see Jarrell grow up during these 7 years and become the young man that he is? And then my favorite parts of the movie and the more happy parts for me are reminiscing on seeing him go into games when I was in the field house covering games or just being there as a fan, and the impact he had. I mean, I think Oatsy's got a line in there that says something to the effect of, there's never been a player in college basketball who scored only 99 points in his career and had a greater impact on a program. Those two aspects, Jarrell and then Howard's playing career, how do you view those?
Well, it's been amazing to watch Jarrell. And I said from the beginning, no one that's 13 years old at the time when this happened should ever have, no one should have to endure this experience of what he witnessed and what he watched and what he has gone through, let alone somebody that's 13, you know, at the time. And how he is, and I know I'm sure the struggles continue, but how he has matured and grown, and his grandparents and Richard and others around him have done a phenomenal job of helping him and completing the child raising process, so to speak, if you will, with him. He's a phenomenal person and has really been a shining light. You know, his mom and his sister are extremely proud of him looking down, and I know Howard is as well. You know, he's a great example of how a person turned in the utmost tragedy and has used it to help him become a great person and a messenger and a light for others. And you're right about Howard. I mean, I always called him the connector. You know, he connected everyone within our program. It didn't matter if you played here in the 50s or you played here in the 2010s, 2020s. He was a bridge to all alumni regimes within our program. That was really
important when I took over. I wanted to bridge all gaps, regardless of who you played for or when you played here. And Howard was at the forefront of really initiating that charge. And like I said, he connected with Badgers young and old, because he was so passionate about this university and is so passionate about this university. And like I said, he's a special, special person that we want to make sure we continue to remember and help in any way we can.
All right, Gardo, I know we got to let you go, but I just want to let you know that Tausch has not proclaimed your team a Final Four team as he has the past several years.
Yeah, I feel like I jinxed it last year.
So would you like to put in a request that he just continues to not say that, because he's done it the last several years, and obviously it has not occurred, and if you're wondering why, now you know.
Tausch is the jinx? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell him he's got bigger things to worry about than that. Tell him to let's help get the Packers back on track here and
number one seeds.
Get them deeper in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And let's get Badger football. Tell him his voice has got to be ready for the fall to get Badger football on the right track and rolling. And and when I need his help in terms of guiding our team to a Final Four, I'll call him. Tell him, don't call me, I'll call him.
Like you did today.
Yeah, Greg, I'm right here, right? Yeah, I'm right here.
I know. All those Auburndale alums, I'm sure, are real proud of your basketball prowessness.
That's true.
Gardo, really keep up the great work and keep staying on those officials. We appreciate every time we get to talk to you. Hopefully we can talk to you about more basketball a little bit down the road. Thanks again.
You bet. Thank you, guys. Take